or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
The Muslim population is growing very rapidly worldwide. In the U.S. alone, it's expected to double by 2030 to 6.2 million people. And so it's easy to be kind of ignore Muslims because they are, an other, if you will. But that's foolhardy, both for a variety of reasons, practical and ethical. And so I thought I would devote a segment to Muslim employment issues, marketing the Muslims. And because my knowledge in that area was thin, I invited an expert to come on the show, and we booked it a long time ago, and then yesterday he decided to cancel. I scurried around trying to find, I contacted every Bay Area organization related to Muslims to try to get somebody who could speak on the topic of Muslims and employment, Muslims and marketing to Muslim consumers, and unfortunately, nobody stepped forward. So, you know how when you, sometimes when you were back in school or college, and you had procrastinated to your term paper, previous show philosophy talk was on procrastination, and you procrastinated, and then, a day before you started to work on the thing, and then by the time you were done, you really knew quite a bit about it. Well, I have scurried around for the last day trying to learn as much as I can about Muslim employment, Muslim marketing to American Muslims specifically. And so hopefully at least it'll be enough to fill a short segment, after which we will do what we usually do on this show, which is go to the phones and do three-minute career makeovers. So if you've got a work-related problem, lack of career, lack of job, unhappiness on your current job, unhappiness in your self-employment, or simply looking for better ideas on how to improve your self-employment, get yourself ready. In a while, I will invite you to call, and I'll be happy to take your calls. But for now, here are some thoughts regarding employment of Muslims, regarding jobs that and careers that may be created because of the Muslim boom, and ideas on marketing to Muslims. First of all, I want to start simply by, maybe it's obvious, but we certainly here in the Bay Area pride ourselves on our sensitivity to diversity in the workplace. And there are a couple of things that are I wanted to bring up in that regard. If you have a Muslim coworker and observe, obviously there are some Muslims who are like, Jews who are like me, who are an atheist, and we don't, we're virtually, our behavior is indistinguishable from anybody else. And that's true of some Muslims as well. But if you have an observant Muslim in your workplace, the kind who's wearing a hijab, that is the scarf with slits for the eyes, and maybe even the full burqa, the full outfit, and is, an observant Muslim, prays five times a day, here are some things you may want to think about. I'm not sure I'm right about this, but I would think that in many, if not most, employment situations, it is reasonable for an employer to offer Muslim employees flexible hours, that so they can pray that five times a day. I don't think they're long prayers, I'm not sure, but I think they're pretty short. But of course, that person needs to get as much done by the end of the day or the end of the week as a non-Muslim employee. Now, of course, I also know that the Muslim Sabbath is Friday, which doesn't coincide well. And this reaches the end of my knowledge, but I would imagine on the Sabbath there may be longer prayers. But I think that might fall for most situations. Some jobs, some workplaces, it's really mission critical that they be there at particular times. That's another story. But in many workplaces where the real goal is get the work done by the end of the day or the end of the week, I think we need to think, and it may be obvious, but maybe not. I think we need to think about there might be an example of a reasonable accommodation that could be made. Secondly, similarly supportive of Muslim needs, I remember 10 years ago when in most workplaces, if someone was applying for a job with tattoos, nose rings or whatever, they were pretty much eliminated immediately. But that's changed. And in fact, we see ever more, even in customer-facing positions, we see people with visible tattoos, nose rings, etc. And so I think that our antipathy, or at least our may not, many people's resistance to seeing someone who's wearing a hijab, that is the veil and a burqa, the very, very modest black, usually black outfit, that could, we could get desensitized to that, and probably we should, in the same way as we get desensitized earlier in decades past to an African-American. You know, we may say, gee, do we really want an African-American in that customer-facing position? Well, now we accept it as a matter of course. Well, I'm wondering whether we need to kind of do the same thing. Yes, maybe it'll be, we potentially businesses will, I think in candor, probably lose some customers in the short run. Because there are some customers who feel uncomfortable dealing with somebody who's in a veil and a full burqa. But I think probably the net good to society would accrue to employers kind of redoubling their effort to be fair-minded about the candidate and not give a minus to somebody who's wearing a hijab or burqa. Similarly true, of course, of Sikhs who wear turbans with the little knife in the turban. Anyway, but that said, you know, I'm also a realist. And in today's world, as I did a little research for the show, it seemed that Muslims are finding it easier to find professional work in these areas that are not customer-facing: accounting, software engineering, and writing, especially technical writing. That's a combination of the fact that they're not customer-facing, and there are many people who do come from countries like Iran that where the culture among professional-level people is very science and math-centric and engineering-centric. And so those might be particularly felicitous fields for those who are Muslims and might be interested in training for a new career. By the way, there are more than 100,000, depending, you know, the advocates say there are 200,000, but somewhere between 100,000 and 200,000 Muslims right now in the Bay Area. So it is not a small population at all. And their birth rate is very high, their immigration rate is high, and their observancy rate is high. Whereas Jews, for example, have a very high intermarriage rate and a very low rate of observance. Most Jews do not go to temple very often. That's not as often the case. And again, I'm being subjective here, but I think you have more observant Muslims than you have observant Jews, for example. And so, you know, it becomes a more central part of their life, and therefore something that if we are to be inclusive, we need to take more cognizance of. Let's turn now to attracting Muslim consumers. If you are in business, if you are in sales, you are in marketing, you own your own business, you're in business development. My review of the literature suggests that observant Muslims value three things more than typical Americans. They value sexual modesty, they value religiosity, and they value family. And so your marketing and advertising efforts that really do are really make sure that there is sexual modesty, for example, even if you're not showing a woman in a burqa, but showing her in a long skirt and no cleavage, might be something that would be more appealing to Muslims. Similarly, religiosity. You know, Unilever, the large multinational corporation, they have tons of products that they sell in the Arab world, which, by the way, has 350 million consumers in the Levant, the Middle East, and also countries that we don't think of as Muslim, but two of the largest are Indonesia and Pakistan. But when Unilever markets to any Arab countries, Muslim countries, there's a difference between the two, they have changed the symbol. Their logo, the Unilever logo, when you look at it the right way, is the word Allah in Arabic. It resembles the word Allah in Arabic. So depending upon how much you're interested in that market, you'd want to take that into account. And clothing, anybody who sells clothing, as I said, you know, even if you're not going to sell hijabs and burqas, if you're going to sell dresses and skirts, they've got to be longer. Even in the summer months, that was something that one of the major Muslim marketers said, even in the summer months, you advertise long skirts. They may be of a lighter fabric, lighter weight fabric, but long. The one holiday in the Muslim calendar that seems to offer potential for businesses is Eid. Eid is a gift-giving holiday. People tend to wear their new clothes. Muslims wear their new clothes on Eid, and they give gifts to children. And so, especially if you are in the clothing business or are selling products to children, allocating a disproportionate, and you're interested in the Muslim market, allocating a disproportionate percentage of your market to the Muslims during the time of Eid, at least especially, you know, targeted publications. I mean, that might be the time that you, if you are, you want to advertise in some on some Muslim website, for example. Okay. Another and a final tip about attracting Muslim consumers. Muslims are, at least observant Muslims, are forbidden to touch alcohol or pork products. And this is something I did not know, but much of the makeup that people wear uses alcohol, and this is what I really didn't know, it uses pork fats as an emollient, smoother, etc., for whatever reason. Well, if you expect observant Muslim consumers to buy your stuff, you've got to sell your makeup that has no alcohol and no pork in it. And they exist, but it's a matter of finding them. You might ask, by the way, why would somebody who's wearing a hijab or a burqa, you know, that is, they're all covered up and they have a covered face, why would they care to wear makeup? Because apparently the rule is a woman is allowed to remove the hijab and burqa at home in front of her husband or family or whatever. And so that's why she might want to wear makeup and still be observant. Now we get to what I find the most interesting part, because the show is explicitly focusing about careers as much as possible. And so here are some, I've aggregated a list of, looks like about a dozen here, of employment and self-employment opportunities that serve Muslims. First of all, I guess I might as well give out the phone number now. If you, you know, whether you're Muslim or Jewish or atheist like me or Christian or Hindu or Buddhist, and you have a career-related question, you have a career problem of any sort, I welcome your call for what I call a three-minute career makeover. More recently, I'm calling them a workover, although that implies I'm going to pummel you, which I promise not to do, unless you deserve it. In any case, if you would like some career help, the price is certainly right. Zero, zippo, nada. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. That's whether you're self-employed, unemployed, employed by government, employed by a company, large or small, any kind of career problem, I usually can help you take at least a baby step forward. Now, back to what I was saying earlier, which is here is a hijab? I thought it was a hijab. Okay, I was just been corrected. Thank you. Hijab, it's spelled H-A-G-I-B, J-I-B. Well, anyway, okay, yeah, my Muslim pronunciation is bad. I apologize. I certainly mean no offense. Observant Muslim women will not disrobe for medical examinations and treatments if the practitioner is a man. So there is a need for more female healthcare providers, especially those speaking Arabic and or Farsi. And then if you are already a female health practitioner and you're looking, for example, let's say you're a doctor, or anybody in kind of private practice, and you're wanting to market to get more consumers, women might be wise to market to the to Muslim audiences. For example, giving a talk at some Muslim association. Phone number again, if you would like a three-minute career makeover or a workover, any kind of work problem, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I'll offer some more of these employment tips from where there are jobs available for Muslims. But first, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hi, Marty. It's Beth in Ohio.
Oh, hi, Beth. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I've been reading and doing a lot of research on my own and what I want to do for a startup business.
Mm-hmm.
And I've decided to put my take my big toe out of the water and go into the pool. Mm. But I'm starting to have some doubts. And I also wanted to ask you a question. The business is a service, and I am working with people who want to have experiences around Columbus with their dogs. Some of it is just some learning. It's going beyond basic obedience and training. It's like making connections. So in January, the theme would be how to survive January when you and your dog have cabin fever and you're inside. And I have a lot of experience working with dogs. My mom is an obedience trainer. My dad does agility, and I've kind of grown up around it. And we have a lot of connections in the area, so that helps too. And so I've done the market research as described in the book. I've looked up the keywords, and it seems to be a 50-50 prospect. I'd also be looking at additional income sources, especially during the summer months when people aren't here. My question is this. I was thinking about doing a launch fundraiser in January for working with a pet, you know, for a rescue group, and doing a demo of what we would be doing for the business, which is called Dogology. And then I was thinking of having the first Dogology workshop and then the second one after that. I figured out my price point. But my question to you is, when moving forward with different pet services or services that are dog-friendly, what can I do to encourage them to make it a win-win situation, especially when winter sales are down and just kind of like sales are down in general? How can I make this a win-win?
Well, I think my first reaction is I'd be doing events at the various rescues and any kind of pet-related entities, including veterinary offices, which drive traffic to them to increase their sales or adoptions. And so if you're not already a great public speaker, you can minimize the demand for those skills by being more facilitator. Somebody who's talking about dogs and making connections is more of a, sounds like a facilitator type. And we've spoken before. You've called in, and I get a feel for who you are. I'm wondering whether you need to have weekly or monthly discussion groups with, at these various venues, where you take a different theme each month. And maybe the first ones are free, and then if they want to keep coming, then there is a fee. It would enable you also to capitalize on their mailing lists, because they all have mailing lists and newsletters. So if that was your main marketing tool, that might be a way for you first to get some money from these group events. And then sometimes people have issues. And maybe you'd be able to recruit some people who one-on-one, maybe pet bereavement or just issues where their pet's been diagnosed with a disease. And, you know, how do you deal with that? How do you make the decision of whether you're going to spend $5,000 to treat their cancer? You know, something that's mission critical, where people are going to pay a lot rather than $10 an hour for dog sitting. Any of that smorgasbord of ideas have any resonance for you?
Yes, but my idea was to try to mix it up and make it between making it fun and things that you can make for your dog or things that you can do with your dog, and then some things that would be informative. So,
I candidly worry that people are not going to pay enough for the fun component of that. You know, teaching how to make a Halloween costume for your dog, somehow that's a free event that's done at the local community center, though they may pay $5. I worry that if you're trying to use this as a source of income, whether making it playful is going to work. That's why I'm focusing on the mission critical, where the dog has died or has cancer or whatever. That's where people are willing to pay. That's my first take, Beth.
Okay. Well, so you don't think that doing things like because there's a lot of people around here in the alternative health community for dogs, and one of the things I was going to do is talk about how to get your dog on a raw food diet and the benefits of a raw food
diet.
Doesn't
pass my smell test, kiddo. That's something they're going to read an article about on the pet food websites or whatever. I don't think they're going to pay you enough money to make that work. It's my honest feeling. I'm sorry, Beth. You know I like you. You've called and emailed very kindly and nicely, but I'm not buying it. I'm sorry.
So what? Okay. So you said mission critical.
Yep. Mission critical pet things that you say go beyond the obvious of obedience training, and for me, mission critical is going to either be, if you're going to be a service dog trainer, that's mission critical. You know, for not just for the blind. I always go under the radar. So there are people who need emotional support pets. Maybe somebody who trains emotional support pets, or pets for the hearing impaired, or you know, something for the elderly who are paralyzed and they have dogs who are trained to go and answer the door or something, or, you know, whatever. But something that is not so discretionary. I know that people spend a fortune on their pets. I spend a lot of money on dog toys for my sweet little Einstein. But it doesn't mean that I think I'm going to pay any serious dollars to have a discussion about having fun costumes for my pet or anything like that. My honest appraisal, Beth.
Okay, even if there was a play component afterwards?
Afterwards is fine, you know, maybe. But I think, maybe I'm too no-nonsense, but I think people in their busy, crazy lives are not going to go and just do a play-centric, pay significant money for something play-centric. I think they're going to only pay for something that's more mission-critical than that. When in terms of their time, they'll buy toys, they'll buy, you know, bully sticks, they'll buy, you know, they'll go to the vet. They spend a fortune on the vet. But I think telling people how to have more fun with their dog when they're having cabin fever, you know, they'll come for free. And, you know, maybe if you do these events and these pet rescue places and humane societies and pet stores, maybe they really want so much to travel, maybe they'll pay you something to come. But I don't think they're going to pay you enough to make that the living. You know, you can do that and get drive traffic to these stores and such, but I don't think that's going to be how you're going to make money. They'll pay you $50 or something, and that's a game. That's a hobby. Sorry,
okay.
Beth. All right, thanks a lot for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. You know, I'd much rather be positive, but, you know, the greatest love you can give to anybody is the truth, usually. Sometimes it's not. But before she goes and she invests her future in this and goes down this path and spends 6 months or a year trying to make this work, and then losing money and the lost income she could have otherwise gotten, or, you know, I feel like I needed to be straight with her. Anyway, I'd like to be straight with you. If you could use some career help of any sort, I will give you lovingly dispensed but candid help, hopefully encouragement, practical ideas. But if I need to discourage you, I will. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko for a 3-minute career makeover or workover is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. At the top of the show, as I mentioned, I was going to devote the first segment of the show to issues related to Muslim employment, one of the fastest growing populations in the world. The U.S. Muslim population is expected to double by 2030 to 6.2 million. It was merely 2.6 million in, I think, 2010. And there's 100,000 already, at least 100,000 people who are Muslims in the Bay Area right now. And they represent people we have to be very concerned about. And I don't mean that in a negative way concerned. I mean caring about their distinctive needs in the workplace, which we've gone over. I've gone over a variety of ways to businesses can attract Muslim consumers. In the same way as every company and nonprofit has separate marketing strategies, not every, many marketing strategies for the Latino market, the African American market, it very often is wise to develop a strategy for attracting the Muslim market as well. But I was then moving into the discussion of various employment and self-employment opportunities serving Muslims. One of the more obvious ones is that Muslims eat what is called halal meat, in which animals are slaughtered in, well, let's just say a different way. They also, Muslims, eat more goat than do other groups. So I am guessing that, and I have no basis for this other than that fact of the fact of the booming Muslim population and the fact that they eat halal meat and they eat more goat, is that halal meat farmers, especially goat farmers and distributors, should thrive. You know, you, of course, in any of these ideas, you know, these are just ideas for you to investigate. You need to do your market research. You need to find out if the market's already saturated for some reason. But, you know, my focus on this show is under the radar. What's under the radar? I mean, everybody talks about doctor, lawyer, healthcare, environment, you know, broadcasting, you know, all that stuff. But I don't think there are a lot of career advice where they're talking about being a halal goat farmer. So anyway, phone number again, if you'd like a 3-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hello. My name's Evelyn.
Hi, Evelyn.
Hi. I spent about the last 12... first of all, I'm 62 years old,
mm-hmm.
about to be, and I've spent the last number of years running a small nonprofit, and we've been pretty successful. We have, you know, the amount of money we raised changed over time, but, you know, some years were good, some were bad, but more important, and I have a background in television production. I know how to do a lot of things. I know how to run a small nonprofit. You know, I know how to produce television programs, but I'm kind of, you know, I'm sort of tired of the whole thing and looking to change my situation, but I'm kind of old. Do you think somebody my age could get a job and, like, doing what?
Yeah, well, it's easiest, you know, at any age to get a job doing something similar to the kind of work you're doing, because, you know, if you have no experience in it, their employers are not going to be thrilled to hire you whether you're 26 or 62. So tell me a little bit about what kind of nonprofit you're in. What is this mission?
Well, it does a lot of media work. And
on what?
So mostly about citizen engagement in media. So we've had some great successes and, you know, done some experimental stuff. I've been lucky to be able to do projects that, you know, that interest me and that I think are good for the world.
So give me a couple of examples, because that's what's going to help me find out help me suggest which organizations you should be tapping.
Well, we just took two citizen journalists to the Republican and Democratic conventions, and they did reports. I arranged, you know, our nonprofit did the entire thing down to producing the videos that aired on television.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these things, projects seem to, you know, they work as projects. I don't know, you know, maybe they've been less successful in terms of becoming, you know, viral and, you know, being, wow, this is the greatest thing that ever happened.
Okay, let me ask you this question. If I gave you $1 million... and you had to give it away to one or two nonprofits, which one or two nonprofits would you give it to?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Maybe like Witness, you know, that takes video cameras out to people who are oppressed and lets them shoot around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just something that, you know, feeds hungry people.
Okay. So what I would suggest you do is that right when you get off the phone, you make a list of the 10 nonprofits you'd most like to work for. And they don't necessarily need to be based in the Bay Area, although it's preferable. Witness would be one. There's all these, you know, food.bomb, whatever the food, you know, various, there's all kinds of food nonprofits. If you just Google the term, even Bay Area nonprofits, you're going to have this master list of hundreds and hundreds of nonprofits that exist. Pick 10. Where you feel that you would most be excited to, and it's realistic that they would hire you to do some kind of media production work. Maybe it's fundraising videos for their website, because fundraising is what they all care about. Maybe it is an outreach to some video that's going to be sent to all the major media to try to get attention from the media. But pitch yourself as a video production person that is likely to generate income from them for them. Of course, the odds are small that any one will say yes. But if you identify 10 and you write a heartfelt letter that describes your background and your commitment to that cause, as well as your successes, and then follow it up with a phone call, you're likely to get at least some project work and thereby make the transition from being self-employed to someone who's employed by a nonprofit that you'd like to work for. Does that make sense?
Well, that's good advice, Marty. Thanks. I just wonder, can you say something about the age issue? I mean, I don't think I'm the only person.
Not at all. Right.
Who's my age who's finding this kind of problem.
The way I like to describe things is that age is one strike against you. It's not three. And in some cases, age can be a plus. If, for example, if you're trying to, if you're worried a lot about, you know, there are some people who are 62, and I'm going to be honest, I like to think of myself as one of them, who's a lot younger. I'm still in very good shape. I'm very physical. I'm very, you know, you can feel my energy. If so there, my age is less likely to be a problem. If I, however, are not, then I would probably focus my efforts on organizations that serve older people so that my age would be a plus. So that, for example, whether it be AARP or it be smaller nonprofits that serve elders here in the Bay Area, there your age would not be seen as a minus, but seen as something as a plus because you can better relate to the client base and be a more visible, a more age appropriate, if you will, representative. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you think that you could, suppose that you decided to go get a job based on your skills and you work in the nonprofit world, do you think you could get one?
Oh, I'm sure. I'd bet anything I could. You know. Right? Like,
yeah.
I know the career field cold, and I know education cold. So if I wanted to work in the nonprofit, because I would do exactly what I told you, I would identify 10 entities related to education, 10 related to career, and I would say, here is what I can do for you, and here is proof that I've done that kind of stuff before. And I wouldn't even mention my age. I really don't think my age is at all relevant. I think anybody who, you know, I'm very blessed. I'm fortunate to have, you know, to be pretty much, I'm better now than I was when I was 52 or 42. So, you know, if you're not, then, you know, do so. Let me ask you that honestly. If the goddess were looking down upon you and looking down at you at 62, what would the goddess say you, in what ways are you better and worse than you were at 52?
Mm-hmm. Well, I am better. I mean, I feel like I'm at least as good, if not better, but you do have to give people resumes, you know, and
that's not how you're going to get hired.
Your age,
Evelyn, that's not how you're going to get hired. Nobody gets hired from a resume, especially if you've been self-employed. A resume guarantees, it just proves to the employer you don't have a work history that's going to be as compatible with their needs as the one they could find if they placed an ad. They place an ad, they're going to get perfect fit folks who have exact experience, and you're doomed. Forget about the resume. You're going to get your job by making a phone call to those 10, to the person who could hire you, either the media relations person or the CEO if it's a small organization or the nonprofits, and you're going to explain to them what you could bring to the table. And your age will be irrelevant at that point. The resume is not going to get you anything. Resume is going to...
Huh? Yeah, I see what you're saying. This is really great advice. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Evelyn. And thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to the phones, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to give out the phone number, invite you to call, and also I'm going to share some more of these employment and self-opportunities that would serve Muslims, which is one of the fastest-growing populations in America, in the world. There's over 1 billion Muslims worldwide, and it's over 100,000 here in the Bay Area, and it's growing very, very quickly. But the phone number, if you'd like some career help, 415-841-4134. That's the phone number for a three-minute career makeover or workover here on Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. Before I go back to the phones, a couple more employment opportunities for serving Muslims. I didn't know this, but doing my homework, I found out that Muslims are not allowed to charge interest on loans. It's against the Quran. The Quran says, no, you can't charge interest. Well, leave it to the financial world to come around with workarounds that at least are satisfactory to some Muslims. So finance people who are money lenders who specialize in something called, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this wrong, but it's S-U-K-U-K is the English transliteration, sukuk or whatever. These are bonds where the lender, instead of getting interest, takes part ownership in the business or whatever it is that the person, or the home or whatever it is the person is borrowing for. So I think that financial people who specialize in sukuks are likely to do well. One more example. One thing that Muslims do, like everybody else, is they travel. They do a lot of tourism. And halal-friendly tourism, that is Muslim custom Quran-friendly tourism, is something that should burgeon. And I've only seen a couple of websites that specialize in this. So, for example, tours that offer halal food, hotels that have sex-segregated pools. According, you know, observant Muslims are not allowed to swim in the same swimming pools. Men and women have to be in separate pools. They must have hotels that do not even serve alcohol. Schedules in tours that allow prayer breaks five times a day. tours that involve mosque visits, tours that are hajjs, that is the pilgrimages to Mecca. I think that halal-friendly tourism is another area likely to grow. I have some more tips, but let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Yes, good morning. Thank you. My name is Lark. How are you today?
I am well. You say your name is Lark?
Yes.
Okay, hi, Lark.
I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. And by the way, your last call actually gave me some ideas.
Great.
For my own 3-minute makeover, but maybe I'll call next week on that.
Okay.
My question for today is about your topic for the day in serving the Muslim community.
Right.
Is it, and I kind of have answered it in my own head a little bit, but it's in the same way with Christians or Jews or other religions. There would be, you know, it would be different if you were Orthodox or if you were mm-hmm. Reform or, you know, in if you were, you know, a strict Catholic or more just, you know, once a year go to church. So is it, within the Muslim community, it sounds like that it's more kind of across the board. In other words, let's just say, for example, for a more Orthodox Muslim, they might need a hotel where all those things are in place, you know, the men and women separate, all the different factors, where maybe for someone who, a Muslim who is more like a liberal Jew, it might just be, you know, one of those things.
Yeah, Lark, the research I did was that Muslims are an unusually religious people, not just because they pray 5 times a day, but there's a higher percentage. Among most Jews are not observant at all. They don't go to temple. They don't pray at all. Many of them don't even believe in a God. They like hanging around with Jews. That's about it. They like going out Chinese food on Christmas. But there is a higher percentage of Muslims who are seriously observant. And that's why, just as there are different preferences and tastes, for example, for the Latino market, and there are different preferences and tastes in the African-American market, that if we truly are to be celebratory of diversity, we need to acknowledge that there are more significant differences between the mainstream American way of marketing to America, which is largely Christian, and the various ethics and values that are inherent in the typical American. There are greater differences between that and the typical behavior of at least many, and I don't know what percentage are observant, but my research suggests that that there's a higher percentage of highly observant Muslims than there are. While officially the Catholic Church says no birth control, yet most Catholics I know are on birth control.
Right.
I think there's a higher percentage of Muslim folks who are more closely adherent to the teachings of the Quran. Makes sense?
Got it. So that's what you're referring to when you're talking about all these different things.
That's why I quote, I've been very careful. This is a sensitive topic, so I've been trying to be as careful as I can be. So I use the term observant Muslims. Every time I say Muslims, I don't say Muslims. I say observant Muslims, at least as much as I can.
So it's not so likely that, as it would be, at least in America, with Christians and Jews, it's not so likely, at least, you know, with the studies that you're using, that you might have a Muslim who just might, you know, and I'm just throwing something out in the air, just might observe one of those things, you know, like, you know, go to, you know, worship just like a couple times a year and not really follow other things as you have with Christians and Jews.
That's my sense. I've read stuff in The Economist and The New York Times. I've also read a number of Muslim websites in preparing for the show, and I'm not sure, but that is indeed my sense. Anyway,
it's not so much a cultural thing. It actually follows the religious text, whereas you said with Jews, oftentimes it's more of just a cultural thing as opposed to following. Got it. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye. Anyway, let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Is it me?
Yes, it is.
Oh, great. Hi, Marty.
Hi.
First of all, I love the topic, and I tuned in late. I don't know if you mentioned the Islamic Cultural Center of Northern California.
I haven't mentioned specific organizations, but that was one of the ones that I did contact in trying to get a guest, and they didn't respond.
Oh, they're amazing. They have a nonstop array of incredible cultural events there
great.
In downtown Oakland.
Great.
And so just putting it out there for your listeners, but that's not why I'm calling.
Okay.
I'm calling because I've started a dance event. Let me turn down my radio, excuse me. I've started a dance event, and it's something new that hasn't happened before. It's called Dance Your One Wondrous Life, and it's for the whole public. It's a freestyle dance to African music, and it's got a kind of mythic journey embedded in it so that people can gain insight and clarity and growth in their lives. And it's a really great event. It's once a week, and people have had great experiences, kind of amazing experiences. And my challenge is, Marty, to get more of the public there. So mm-hmm. I'm calling you to find what ideas you might have to do that.
Well, it's clearly that's the kind of thing that's going to appeal to a certain segment of the community. And I would guess these are spiritually oriented people, disproportionately women. Women tend to like to dance more than men. Women are more into that kind of thing. And so my way would be to try to piggyback on existing websites, either advertising or writing, posting videos of these events, since they're so good, on the websites and even print publications that appeal to spiritually oriented people, especially women.
Ooh.
Make sense?
Yeah.
I'll quit while I'm ahead. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll give out the phone number again. If you would like some career help, sometimes it takes me just a few seconds. Sometimes it takes 10 minutes. I'll take the time that is required, whatever your work problem. Probably one of the nicest compliments that was ever given me was given by, I'm not allowed to say this, but Ron Owens on another station, KGO. And he said, I've been on his show for 25 years, and he said, Marty, you are unstumpable. We have had hundreds of calls coming in from all kind of diverse people. And I usually can help you get at least a baby step and sometimes a giant step forward. I've been doing this a long time now, 26 years. This show starts, my 25th year here on KLW. So in any case, if you would like to get some free career advice, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I go to the phones, more tips on employment and self-employment opportunities serving Muslims. Halal personal chefs. There are many successful Muslim people who are typically engineers or executives or computer scientists or accountants or whatever, and they're busy like everybody else. And they are sometimes hiring personal chefs, especially if they've got a health problem. I have a friend who's not Muslim, but he was diagnosed with diabetes, and he wants to eat well. He doesn't just want to eat the basic thing, so he's hired a personal chef to make diabetes-friendly meals for him. Well, I would imagine that there are folks who are Muslims who want to eat halal, but who are either super busy or have a complicated health condition like diabetes, and would hire a personal chef. I think there's going to be a growing market there. One more tip before we go to the phones. There's no question that Islamic studies programs are burgeoning at universities. Universities specialize in the other. Just like, 40 years ago when women were perceived as the other, there was a burgeoning number of women's studies programs and African-American studies programs and LGBT study programs. Now, Islamic studies are perhaps the fastest growing group of programs that's starting at universities. So while in most fields, PhDs have a real problem landing a professorship because the economy has been so bad for so long, so many people have gone and gotten a doctorate, figure they'll wait out the bad job market and then they'll have the PhD and hopefully things will turn around. But unfortunately, there's an enormous oversupply of PhDs in most fields. But I'm guessing, and again, I don't have data, I'm guessing that it may be easier to find employment with a PhD in Islamic studies. Any case, phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco for 3-Minute Career Makeover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, my name is Abby McLean, and I'm a small publisher putting out a quarterly.
Yeah.
That features interviews with college professors. And I guess there's been some pressure for us to become a nonprofit, and I'm trying to navigate that and decide what's best and connect with people who are interested in this.
Mm-hmm. And so what's your question for me?
Well, you seem pretty connected with, education systems in general and sort of... I just thought you might have some advice about how a publication such as ours might go about marketing itself?
Well, I think, the first component of marketing is actually one that gets ignored and needs to be considered, which is, what's your product? Is your product likely to become a compelling purchase for your target market? There's so much content that's free. Content has become a commodity. When I started out as a writer, I was paid very well. Now I'm paid, they want me to write for nothing. You know, and I'm talking about major national publications.
Sure.
And so with content so pervasive and people willing to write for nothing, because we all have this desire to create and be self-expressive, your value proposition to the readership has to be very, very compelling. So, for example, if your target market is, people like to read about themselves, so if the target market is other professors, then it would be, what's most compelling to a professor is, how do I, for our topics like this, how do I go from being a non-tenured gypsy professor to getting on a tenure track? If I'm on tenure track, how do I get to be a professor? If I am trying to get a research grant, what are the secrets to writing a research grant that's compellingly fundable? Those are high compelling value pieces of information. And devoting each issue of your quarterly to a question like that will make it more compelling. And then you can market probably without even having to go the nonprofit route. I'm not wise enough to know what the financial advantages and disadvantages in your situation of going nonprofit or for-profit. But once you have a product that is compelling like that, then I think your job of marketing to universities will be much, much easier. Does that make sense?
Sure does.
Okay. I thank you very much for calling Work With Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, I welcome your call. If you want a work-related problem, as you can see, whether you're self-employed as she is or employed by others, whether you're at the pinnacle of your career or at the nadir, that's a nice word. I like that, nadir, N-A-D-I-R. It's like the opposite of apogee, or which is the top, or opposite of zenith, the nadir. Wherever you are in the on the career hierarchy, the phone number for some career help, the price is certainly right. I like to call it Zippo Zero Nada. The phone number here at Work With Marty Nemko for a three-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. More tips about employment and self-employment opportunities serving Muslims, which is my theme for the day. No surprise, the CIA and related agencies are usually seeking candidates that are competent in one or more Middle Eastern languages and cultures. You know, it is sad, you know, when you really think about how often in the headlines there is Muslim extremism and Muslim violence that, you know, today there was a bombing of the UN hotel in Damascus this morning. And you layer all that on top of everything from the debacle in Libya, the bombing of the consulate and the Egyptian embassy and our embassy, and of course our debacles in Iraq and Afghanistan, and there have been terrorist bombings everywhere from Spain to Indonesia, and of course 9/11 here. It's clearly the CIA has made Muslim extremism and an appropriate target for a lot of their efforts. So and that's another thing, by the way, if you've got a PhD in Islamic studies, you know, and if you don't want to go the university route, certainly working for the CIA-related agencies, if you do care, some people do not care particularly about protecting American interests, but if, you know, and there's a lot of anti-American sentiment among some folks, but if you're not one of those people, you might want to consider contacting the CIA or related agencies. Another example, Muslim psychologists are going to be needed. They call them, especially regarding relationships, they call them matrimonial counselors because they, they don't believe in premarital sex. There is demand for Muslim psychologists, matrimonial counselors. While there really is a growing Muslim feminist movement, I was part of my research for the show today, I read a bunch of things. In fact, most Muslim relationships, even in this country, are very different than the relationships between partners that are typical American. And I don't know anything about I don't think they allow gay relationships, or they're very against them, more so than anyway. But certainly among traditional heterosexual couples, the standard relationships between Muslim partners is very different. So psychologists and other counselors who understand and respect the Muslim approach to relationships may indeed flourish. Also, teachers. There are now Muslim private schools that are absolutely burgeoning. There's one here, a high school in Fremont, And they've got an ad out right now for a math teacher and a Quran teacher, as well as a bus driver. And so if you're a teacher and you are supportive of Muslim teachings, Quran, the Quran, etc., that might be an opportunity for you to find a teaching job where otherwise, right now, the job market for teachers is not great unless you're a special ed teacher, a bilingual education teacher, or a science or math teacher. If you are more, if you are an English teacher, a history teacher, or an elementary school teacher, you might find greater success if you're so inclined to teach at a Muslim school. And finally, we realize, we all know that it's a global economy and that marketing just to America, to Americans, whatever business is ignoring an enormous market. And with Muslims being the fastest growing market in the world, there are 350 million Arab consumers. Now, I'm differentiating Arab from Muslim because Arab is a more geographic area rather than Muslim being a religion. But, for example, all over the Middle East, of course, but also in Africa, countries like Somalia, but throughout Africa, and in countries such as Indonesia and Pakistan. If you are in business development or you are in marketing and you are looking for a perhaps under-the-radar opportunity, there just is a tendency to view the Arab world as the other, but they spend a lot of money. And if you are so inclined, that's a way to differentiate yourself. Also, as a job seeker, if you're trying to get a job in marketing or a job in business development, being another person who just gives a standard background is one thing. But if you, as part of the package of your application for a job or in interviews, if you say, you've come up with a little plan for marketing to whatever, Iraq or Nigeria, which I learned has a very high Muslim population, that might give you an edge. All right. If you would like an edge in your career, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko for a career makeover, any kind of career. If, let's say, something happened to you this week that was a problem and you don't know how to deal with it at work, any kind of problem like that is fair game. Or let's say you have a personal problem, like the previous show, Philosophy Talk, did a show today on procrastination. If you're suffering from procrastination, it's hurting your professional as well as personal life, or drug problem. I have seen more careers ruined by drug abuse, and habitual pot smokers really do, not all, but most do have impaired memories. They do often have impaired motivation, and that can be a career killer and a personal life killer, of course, and a driving accident killer. If you would like some help on any aspect of your career, directly related to career or indirectly, I invite you to call for what I call a 3-minute career makeover, 415. Here, we're listening, by the way, to Work with Marty Nemko. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Also, if you want to run your pitch by me, let's say you are a job seeker and you're always having to give your 15-second or 30-second pitch to people you're networking with, to employers, if you'd like to run it by me, I will tell you if I think it's great or not, and share a better one with you. Phone number again, 415-841-4134. Well, you can run a business idea. I'll let you know if I'd invest in it or not, or how I'd improve it. Okay, now, some tips about finding a job. What I really, that's what so many people, even though the official unemployment rate is down to 7.8%, that is so misleading. I found out that they changed the formula, which is part of why it's gone down. And also, the number of people who are underemployed, who are working in crappy little jobs that are part-time, low-level work when they really are professionals, is very high. And then the number of discouraged workers who aren't even counted in the unemployment, just because their unemployment has run out, or they've just gotten discouraged, that doesn't get counted. I swear to you, my honest appraisal, if I were to count the percentage of people who are in the Bay Area are either unemployed, including those not getting unemployment, underemployed, doing crappy low-level jobs, working part-time when they really can't sustain and would really want to work full-time, or working in something that has nothing to do with their expertise and doing just something that, because they were desperate, I honestly feel that 35% of people fall in that category. I think about 65% of people are doing okay, but that's a ridiculously large percentage, 35%. And, you know, I have devoted previous shows to what I would do to change that. One of my, I do think, while I know there's a lot of sleazy entrepreneurs out there, I do think that training more people to be ethical entrepreneurs, starting in little mock businesses in kindergarten where they teach kids to sell cookies and such, all the way through, you know, or what a healthy, of course, organic, healthy, oatmeal-based, minimal sugar cookies, all the way through ethical business and entrepreneurship training programs in colleges and in adult schools, I think would be one of the better ways to create jobs in this country, as well as what I call an assistance army, where we teach people that rather than buying another pair of shoes, they might be wiser to hire people to provide a service, whether it be a homework helper for your child, somebody to teach you computer stuff if you're a computer idiot, if somebody to care for your elder parent, somebody to run errands for you. Spending your money on those kind of services is probably going to do more to improve your quality of life than anything else and would create tons of jobs that are ethical. Anyway, let's go to the phone. Oh, we only have a minute. The time, the clock is running. Okay, let's go take a last call. Welcome to Work with Marty and Emco. I look at the clock and, only have a minute or so. What's your question or comment? Hello, it's you. Are you there? He or she is gone. Ah, they hung up. They got cold feet. Okay, so we have a minute left. So what I want to do is simply offer one little tip. We've talked about marketing. And so let me do that. One of the kind of an antiquated yet still established technique for sales is you sell the features and the benefits. That's not an effective way to sell anymore. We've come beyond that. The most effective way to sell is to ask where the client's pain is. What's keeping you up at night? What's the problem? What's annoying you? And then, if you can honestly, propose a solution to that pain. And the other key thing about being a really good salesperson is you must talk no more than 40% of the time. Salespeople like to talk 60, 70, 80, 90% of the time. I actually went with KGO on a sales call to Genentech. The woman would not shut up. She talked 90% of the time. Of course, we didn't get the deal. Any case, talk no more than 40% of the time, and that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do three-minute career makeovers on callers and a debate. Who will be better on jobs, Obama or Romney? Someone from the San Francisco Democratic Central Committee is going to debate that with someone from the San Francisco Republican Party. And that's it, I guess. And until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
Marty Nemco has a new book out, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School, and 1,000 of his published articles are free on his website. From there, you also can email him if you'd like coaching on your career or to comment on this program. His site is martynemco.com. That's MartyNemko.com. And you can join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco right here at 91.7 KALW San Francisco.